Hello and welcome to Humble Brag. My name is Nate Mandel. Today we're going to be talking about conspiracy theories. I don't know if you can hear the wind whirling in the background. I could maybe turn my down mic slightly. Israel has a heat wave that came through today. It's over 100 degrees and it seems to be windy as well. In this episode is not going to be edited as I usually edit my episodes. I typically try to edit out mouth sounds, pauses, retakes, so on and so forth, because it makes it more pleasant to listen to. But I don't have the time nor the patience today, so you're going to get a raw, unedited clip. Yesterday, I was listening to a X space hosted by someone by the name of Patriot, something along those lines. And the topic was the Israel-Palestine debate. So I tuned in. It was 1 a.m. here. And I'm listening to it. And I raised my hand. I request the mic to try to speak. I did so consistently for about an hour and a half straight. And I was not granted the mic. What I did notice was that during this hour and a half or so that I was listening in, they were giving the mic to about 80% pro-Palestine speakers. So I just wanted to mention that that's not how you have a debate. That's not even called a debate. Most of those speakers who were pro-Palestine were just going on these 5-10 minute rants that were filled with all kinds of misinformation and lies, and they weren't giving adequate time for the opposition to speak, and that's not called a debate. It wasn't just me that was raising my hand, but there were some other pro-Israeli accounts who were trying to speak, and it just wasn't there. So then they moved the space over to another one. I had my hand raised there. It was about close to 3 a.m. at that point, and I was losing my patience, so I just left. I got tired of waiting. But that sparked some of my memory regarding conspiracies in general, that crowd in general, that modality of thinking in general. And I figure I'll make a Humble Brag episode on this topic, because it's an interesting topic in its own right. It doesn't necessarily only apply to this particular conflict, even though I'll spend some time debunking some of these conspiracies. It's more or less a topic of conspiracy theories in general. And it essentially goes like this. First of all, I want to begin by saying that as a conspiracy theorist, we often think that you're either in the fold, meaning you agree with the conspiracies and those who enjoy believing conspiracies, or you are on the complete opposite side of the spectrum and you believe mainstream media, so on and so forth. And I want to tell you that there is a middle ground. I believe the truth resides somewhere in the middle. Okay. I will also say that, and this is what I wanted to say on that X space, I don't imagine that I would change the mind of those who spoke. For example, those who I wanted to respond to. Her name was Maze. There was a guy, Truth Teller. There was Alpha, who was talking a lot about the religious side of things, which is less relevant than they think it is. And some of those personalities. Now, as someone who used to really be into conspiracies, I could empathize really deeply with that modality of thinking. The notion of changing a person's mind, someone who's very stooped into conspiracies on that level, is very slim. You primarily want to speak to the hundreds of other people who are in that space who might be impartial. In every crowd, and in a crowd like that, you're going to have portion of people, very low percentage, I believe, who are really impartial, and they're just trying to make sense of this. But if you pretend like your space is impartial, and then 80% is just nonstop ranting and raving by conspiracy nutjobs, that's not a debate. And you're not going to help people who are impartial move closer to the truth. So I could empathize with conspiracy theorists in this capacity. And by the way, they said it themselves. I was going to bring this up. And then one of the people said something about 9/11, Israelis jumping for joy, and he wanted to go down that whole path. And they're like, yes, yes, go down that path. You know, you're in a space full of conspiracy. You know, we love that title, blah, blah, blah. So then I'm like, okay, so I know exactly what I'm dealing with. It's not that I'm judging or reading this wrong. I understand exactly the type of crowd that I'm dealing with. That was me about 15 years ago. When I was a teenager, I became obsessed with some conspiracies, certain conspiracies. I spent dozens, if not hundreds of hours learning about the Illuminati. And in doing so, when I looked out into the world, believe me, I saw pyramids everywhere. And as I got older, it kind of withered away and it became less meaningful. Whether there is a group, there isn't a group, New World Order, so on and so forth. These ideas, they could consume you in a way that is not very realistic. It can, you pay more attention to it and you give it more precedence than it actually has in reality. I'll say that. But what's my point? For many years, I was very into it. I know what it feels like. Now, more recently, or some years later, actually, well, I don't know if it's some years later, but with the 9/11 thing, there are still some conspiracies that I believe. For example, I don't believe the Twin Towers and Building 7 came down naturally. I don't know how it was orchestrated, who did what, so on and so forth. There are a lot of theories on that. They love to jump to the Mossad because they saw some people dancing. I don't go down that road because there isn't enough sufficient evidence for any of the explanations. But I, from the evidence that I've seen, and I also spent hundreds of hours watching documentaries and reading articles about it. And by the way, there are thousands of architects who don't agree with the mainstream narrative. So with that amount of evidence by my side, I personally believe that the Twin Towers did not come down naturally. It looked more like a controlled demolition. Building 7 came down in the same manner. The likelihood of three buildings like that coming down from natural causes, it just doesn't add up to me. So I acknowledge that I believe a certain conspiracy. I'm comfortable. And even if somebody labels me as a conspiracy nut, no problem. If you want to call me that for believing that those towers didn't come down naturally, or for believing that, for example, it doesn't look like a plane hit the Pentagon, it seems from the one video that exists that it was a missile, no problem. Call me that. I'm happy to change my mind once you show me evidence to the contrary, but as of today, it doesn't exist. Again, what's my point? I understand believing in conspiracies. I was wholly invested in it when I was younger. There are some things that I believe. But to go from that, for example, and to pretend like a conspiracy like 9/11 and the buildings is akin to October 7 is a huge leap, and it actually doesn't add up, and it could easily be debunked. With 9/11, you have thousands and thousands of people and strong arguments to claim that a building shouldn't have collapsed like that, let alone three of them. With October 7 conspiracies, that the Mossad or the Israel set up the whole thing, or whatever angle or narrative you're trying to push, there's not enough evidence. In fact, there's so much evidence to the contrary that it falls apart. What I'm trying to illustrate is that it doesn't have to be all or nothing. The truth is often somewhere in between. Another thing is, as a conspiracy theorist, you don't have to believe every conspiracy. If you do so, you end up insulating yourself from people who are real, rational, logical, and intelligent speakers. You insulate yourself into a group of people who are like-minded to you, And then when you pop out of your hole, your cave every once in a while, you look around, you can't understand why the entire world disagrees with you, nor can you make sense of the world because you went down a rabbit hole, a vortex of sorts, of believing every single lie. I'm all for conspiracies, if you want to call it that, but they have to make sense. There has to be a ton of evidence, and it has to be so much more overwhelming than the evidence on the other side. And that doesn't exist with October 7th. So what I felt listening to that space as an outsider, I've never been on the space. I one time in my life spoke on a space that had an audience of four people. I was just having a conversation with someone. I've never spoken on a space. I've never been in this guy's space before. I wasn't sure what the crowd was, but I learned over the hour and a half of listening, I learned really quickly what we're dealing with. Calm down. That's absolutely not how you're going to get rich, truthful, reality-based information. If you are one of the people listening to one of these spaces and you are impartial and you're trying to make sense of what's going on, listen to experts. Don't listen to people sitting behind a computer thousands of miles away pontificating on what they think makes sense or doesn't make sense. Listen to the experts. For example, there was recently a phenomenal conversation interview by Sam Harris. He was interviewing John Spencer, who is a military guy from West Point, who his expertise is urban warfare. He's very familiar with the Israel-Palestine conflict, and he's very familiar with all urban warfare that took place over the past 40 or so years. Listen to a conversation like that. You know, getting your information from the wrong places is the catalyst by which conspiracy theorists go down this rabbit hole. You're listening to people who are not experienced. They know nothing about the actual facts of, let's say, the event, so on and so forth. And you build your entire framework, your entire belief system on people like that. It makes zero sense. It would be like, you know, if you're a woman and you get pregnant, and instead of going to a doctor who specializes in pregnancies to get advice, let's say it's a high-risk pregnancy, you're listening to a purple-haired, gender-confused girl who plays video games all day or who protests on campus. That's who you get your advice from for your pregnancy. That's how absurd it is. So you have to get your information from solid places. When you do, this world makes much more sense. Now, let's start with some things that Maze said. She says almost pretty much everything that she said is false. She's at least, at a minimum, a good articulator. She speaks clearly and coherently, so it appears that you could have a conversation with her. That doesn't mean just because somebody sounds smart, just because they sound good and they're saying a lot of things, doesn't mean that what they're saying is true. She's a great articulator. Almost everything she says is false. Certainly the conclusions she's coming to is false. And I'll give you some examples, but I wanted to draw on something else for a moment. One of the things she says was like, Twitter was X, Y, and Z. And then one of the people, Suleiman, whatever his last name is, I forget, Suleiman, he completely debunked and like exposed this Zionist, you know, the Zionist lies. He was like the catalyst. And I'm thinking to myself, no, maybe you just follow him and you went down that rabbit hole of believing his nonsense. But Suleiman, seriously, that would be like saying, Alex Jones exposed Sandy Hook, and then the world never believed it ever since. Alex Jones didn't expose Sandy Hook. The opposite. He had a whole conspiracy, made up lies, and hurt a lot of people. And then eventually, because he went a little too far and pissed off too many people, he suffered the consequences. Suleiman exposed Zionist lies. And she gives two examples. She says, the beheaded babies. And then she says, the rapes. Well, guess what? the beheaded babies was not a lie that the Zionists said. It was a misquote or maybe a misspeak by a journalist who was covering something. And that journalist corrected it right away. So everyone who ran with it made a simple error. But because once it's very difficult, once information is out, to stop the domino effect. But everyone who's like involved in this conversation understands that that took place. And right away it was backtracked. The journalist didn't mean that 40 babies were whatever. Nothing to do with Zionist conspiracy. It was something that was reported and then it had a domino effect and it was pulled back. The rape, the mass rape did take place. In fact, even the UN has acknowledged it. So when you have a space full of people who are listening to you and you're quoting Suleiman as if you would quote Alex Jones on the Sandy Hook thing, you're not even on the spectrum of information dissemination and truth. You're not even in the same weight class. Like I said, it would be like going to the purple-haired video game player to get advice about high-risk pregnancy. As an outsider looking in, seeing people who believe and quote or misquote all these stuff, it's silly and immature. This mode of thinking has no basis in reality. And if you think this way, if you choose to think this way and you don't consider doing the hard work of listening to long-form podcasts and interviews by experts, then you're doing yourself a disservice. Then you're going to live your life not understanding this world, not understanding why things are happening. And that's at the crux of a lot of this. People not understanding how is Israel getting away with this? It's because they're not getting away with anything. They're in the right. If you don't understand why they're in the right and how they're able to continue to do what they're doing, then you are lacking information. Then maybe the people who you're listening to are not getting good information, are not giving you good information. Anyway, so that's a bit of a framework of, you know, the conspiracy, you know, the bird's eye view of the conspiracy realm in and of itself. And this applies to everything, all conspiracies across the board. It wasn't just me who was into conspiracies. My grandmother and I have other family members who are really into it. From crop circles to lizard people to all the celebrities that you see are clones. It just doesn't end. It doesn't stop. And like I said, you don't have to believe every conspiracy. Not everything is a conspiracy. And if you go down that road that everything turns into conspiracy, then you're done. You end up being a kook. Nobody takes you serious. You're off the deep end. So to be an intellectual, to have discourse on a higher playing field with the grown-ups, you need to not go down that road. You need to balance that. Learn the balancing act of, you know, don't believe mainstream off the bat. Look into stuff yourself, listen to experts, come to determinations, and I guarantee you, if you put in the work in the capacity that I'm describing, you will absolutely and undoubtedly come to different conclusions. Okay, so now let's look at some of the conspiracies, some of the nonsense that's being sheared, some of the narratives that are being told. And I'm just going to kind of use yesterday's space that I didn't have a chance to speak on to reflect on some comments, because there's so much that could be said. You know, when Truth Teller gets on and he gives his rant for 30 minutes and Israel did this and Israel did that, and it's like, oh gosh, just stop. That's not a conversation. You've made up your mind. You're a conspiracy nut job. You're just spewing every lie. There are real reasons in the real world for almost every single thing that these guys raise. If you want to have a conversation about each individual thing, we can. It's not going to take place by somebody like Patriot giving the same people the mic over and over again and not giving the opposition the mic. You have to slow down, you make an argument, you listen to the other side, and you work through it. That's how we could come together. And if anyone disagrees, I am open to jumping on a Zoom. We could turn it into another episode where we have a dialogue back and forth, piece by piece, to work through it, to see if we could come to some consensus. But this notion of vomiting regurgitated lines and lies and propaganda is just so low IQ. But let's look at some of the stuff that was actually said. And this is a microcosm to everything. There's a million lies against Israel. Every single one could be debunked, but it's impossible to do it unless it's a full-time job, which for me it isn't. So what I can do is just take some of the stuff that I remember that was being said and run with it from there. So let's look at Mays first, because there were two things that I wanted to mention about Mays. One of the first one is that in her narrative of describing the Palestinians, she wants to put forth the premise that we're all human and we're all kind of equal and we all want nice, like we all want a good life and some form of a democracy and freedom and peace and love. And it's factually not true. There's a real world and then there's a make-believe world. And people who believe what Mays said in that capacity are in a make-believe world. Here's a fact that you have to contend with when you try to pretend like Islam and the religion and the people and the culture and Islamism, fundamental Muslim belief, the indoctrination. If you want to pretend like that's equal to every other belief system, you have to contend with this fact that in the past century, there have been more than 42,000 terror attacks committed in the name of Islam. That is unprecedented. It's unmatched. You cannot contend with that fact. And it destroys the entire premise of the argument that everyone's equal. We all believe equal things. We all want equal things like peace and love and harmony. And then there's like this New World Order conspiracy cabal who's coming up with lies and narratives, and we're so good at spinning it and we're convincing the world. It's just such utter stupidity and immaturity. So you have to understand that. And this ties into the next thing, which is that when they, Mays and pretty much everyone else who describes the Palestinian narrative, I should say the Western version of the Palestinian narrative, because even the Palestinians, they would laugh you out of the room if you tried to, like, unless you're a useful idiot. So unless you're helping the war effort, the propaganda war efforts in this capacity, they need you. You're useful to them. But like your modality of thinking in their real world day-to-day life, you would be laughed out of the room. You're essentially a useful idiot in that capacity. But the entire narrative, as I just described, and in other capacities, negates the, I'm losing my train of thought because I don't know if you can hear this in the mic, but on my headphones, the wind is so strong. There's probably like 15, 20 mile an hour winds outside. It's whirling. That the entire narrative overlooks one core issue, which is that the Palestinians refuse to take accountability and responsibility for their actions. That ties into the 42,000 number thing, because there's a factual reality on the ground, not conceptual. Because what Mays is saying is conceptual. All humans want peace and serenity and blah, blah, blah. Bullshit. Not all humans want that. Because Iran wants to wipe out Israel and the US. So they clearly don't want peace. So to think that is just outrightly stupid. But it overlooks the reality. The reality is that there have been more than 42,000 terror attacks in the name of Islam. That's the reality. It's not conceptual. That took place. You have to contend with that. When people share the narrative, like Truth Teller as well, when he goes on his rants, and Israel did this and Israel did that in 1948, and they expelled people, and then they blockade, and they, you know what predates every single one of these events? Either terrorism, an uprising, war, or something to that effect. The Palestinians are used to poking the bear, terrorizing, doing whatever, and then playing victim. And it's not astonishing that they do that, because that's embedded into their culture, because it's the only strategy they have. They're the underdog in this capacity. It's astonishing that people in America fall for that nonsense. You want to understand why people were expelled? Understand why they were expelled. You want to understand why there's a blockade? Understand why there's a blockade. All of these things are legitimate. It's not an illegal blockade. It's a blockade that was put in as a response to terrorism. Weapons and guns and stuff were being smuggled. Terrorism. So therefore, we will put a stop to it. The wall that was built, you know, West Bank, they were throwing rocks. They were attacking people on the road, throwing at vehicles and stuff like that. They built a wall. It stopped terrorism. Every single thing. He went on a rant about West Bank. They come in middle of the night to create chaos and they arrest random people. Bullshit. It's always people who are thousands of miles away, have zero inkling of the reality of the ground, that come up and are able to say stuff like this. It's completely and utterly false. Almost every single child, like, you know, young teenager who is arrested and held in prison, did something illegal. They very often throw rocks at civilians or IDF or police officers. And these are not pebbles. It's not like little kids throwing pebbles. They throw rocks that are the size of this. Think about a rock the size of a mango. They pelt these at human beings. That's deadly force. And if you think Israel is any different than the U.S. in that capacity, you're wrong. Let me ask you something. What would a New York City police officer do if a 16-year-old pelts a stone the size of a mango at him? He gets arrested. So these conspiracies, oh my God, the Israelis are doing this and they're doing... No, there's a democracy, there's a court system, there's a justice system, there's law, and then there's order. And when you have an entire society who indoctrinates into hate, violence, so on and so forth, which then motivates children and teenagers to break the law, those children and teenagers get arrested and they get held. They're not hostages. They're simple prisoners. There is no way to like wiggle your way out of that. It's law and order. Just like in the United States, if you did those things, you would get arrested. In Israel, if you do those things, you would get arrested. And those are the small crimes, throwing rocks. A lot of these kids attempt actual terrorism. One of the women that they let out in the exchange deal, the one that was cut through her lip, buck 50, she tried to blow herself up. She tried to it was like a suicide bombing that failed of some sort. I don't know. Or maybe only she got injured, something went wrong. But this notion that they're just arresting random innocent people, wrong, bullshit. The two of the kids that they let out in the exchange deal were the two of the kids. We have it on video of them chasing, running down people with knives, stabbing people on the street. So again, when you go down this world, this web of conspiracies, and you're listening to people who don't know what they're talking about, every single tiny lie, tiny narrative, what they try to do is, one of the tactics is you compound stuff. I've even seen, you know, let's say quasi not conspiracy theorists do this. You know, think about people like, I got to swap the video. One sec. These videos, they shut off after 30 minutes. So I got to get up and manually swap it. I guess I caught that right at the right time or about. It's not just conspiracy theorists who do this. In one of my recent videos where I'm talking about Cenk Uygur or Francesca Fiorentini, this is a tactic where you just like, you say a bunch of shit, you try to compound a bunch of stuff, and then the opponent feels like, oh my God, you overwhelm me with so much. Not even the opponent, like if I was arguing with somebody, I would see right through that strategy. But the listeners who don't know how to make sense of all the things that were being said, they get overwhelmed. They feel like, look, there's so much evidence against Israel. But when you start chipping away at every single argument, all of the sudden they go by the wayside. And it's like you pull out the bottom card, house of cards. So, because what would happen in a real debate is, so let's say I chip away at this lie, this fabrication that Israel IDF arrests random people. You chip away at it. So what they'll do is they'll give up on that lie and they'll just want to go to the next one. You know what? You're right about that, or we're going to agree to disagree, but let's go to the next one. And it's like, no. You can't drop 100 lies on me or on your audience and then pretend like you're being truthful. Every single one of those lies could be pulled and picked apart. And this was just one of them. You know, again, truth teller was going on that rant. And everybody always says this. What about the West Bank? What about the West Bank? You want to see videos of the West Bank? The stuff that goes on there on a daily basis? You think the terrorism and the crime and all that stuff only takes place in Gaza? The IDF responds legally to incidents, just like American police officers respond to incidents all day. And people get arrested, people get in trouble. And it's really that simple and straightforward. There are stories here and there where maybe there was some mistreatment by the law enforcement. Somebody may have been held longer than they should have, because there is complications in the whole court system, how you try these people. But this is like, that's justice and inner politics. It doesn't touch on the core, which is what I mentioned earlier. Actions have consequences. And in the bigger scheme of things, conspiracy theorists putting forth these narratives, and everyone who's pro-Palestine does this, you're avoiding the core premise that the Palestinians don't want to take responsibility and be held accountable for their actions. There's a blockade because they behaved a certain way. There's a wall because they behave a certain way. They're arrested because they behave a certain way. Just like all these things would take place in the United States or any normal country, because actions have consequences. The consequences of October 7 is what you see now. Gaza being destroyed as we're trying to root out Hamas. So in the real world, there are simple 1+1 type of explanations for pretty much everything that takes place. In the conspiracy world, it's like, no, what's behind it? What's the bigger conspiracy? There is no bigger conspiracy. Jews want to live in peace. A lot of the Arab nations want to destroy Israel, and we will defend ourselves. End of story. One point I want to make is that you can sit thousands of miles away and pontificate and theorize about what we should or shouldn't do. Me, living 30 minutes from Gaza in Israel, I don't have the luxury of getting it wrong. Meaning, you could posit a theory and potentially be wrong. It doesn't cost you, your family, your friend, and your community their life. If us Israelis get it wrong, we're dead. There's no do-over, there's no second chance. On October 7th, we got it wrong. We were killed. It costed us more than 1,000 human beings. There's zero or close to zero margin for error in the real world of kill or be killed. So you come with Western political theory, all kinds of ideas, who's running it, what needs to be done. How about this one? Mays says the Israeli government has to be dismantled. It's like, we have to redo this. It was one of the first points that I wanted to make. I am not a huge fan of having conversations that are superfluous, meaningless conversations. I enjoy conversations that potentially have value. For example, if you want to have a conversation about a two-state solution, sure, why? Because theoretically, it could still take place. So it's a valid conversation. Let's talk about something that could take place, or that there's a chance of it taking place. When you talk about things that are completely superfluous, all it does is demonstrate that you have no idea what you're talking about, meaning you're so detached from the reality and the truth of the situation that you're able to make such statements. Imagine Mexico had issues with the United States, and I was theorizing from 4,000 miles away, and I say something along the lines of, you know, the United States government needs to dismantle, and there needs to be an overhaul. Clearly, you would agree that it's a meaningless statement, and the fact that I'm saying it shows how little I know about the United States. Because the notion of the United States government dismantling so that we could reform how the country works and maybe give Mexico a part of it, it's idiocy. It's a quintessential low IQ idiocy. It's not happening, so why do you even mention something like that? It's like people overseas view Israel as some kind of like grassroots project, like it's a trial, like we're trying out the Israeli state. Bro, we're 45 years into an established country, very strong, very powerful, strong allies. Israel's not dismantling the government. Like, people who speak this way demonstrate such ignorance on the reality of the situation. And when people do that and they essentially waste time, you're wasting ear time, you're wasting your breath, you're wasting ear time, and you're wasting all the listeners' time on things that are never going to take place. It's like, let's have a 10-minute conversation about if unicorns were to come into existence. It ain't happening. So let's not have that conversation. Let's only talk about things that are relevant, things that are viable, things that could actually help. Talking about Israeli government dismantling, it shows that the propaganda and the stupidity does get to a portion of humanity. And I do want to mention that 80%, and the polls haven't changed much, 80% of Americans, 70 to 80%, you know, clear thinking Americans who have moral clarity and ethics by their side, primarily those living outside of the cities, they are 100% behind Israel. They see what Hamas did, what they tried to do. They see the propaganda game that Hamas is trying to play. And they see through all the nonsense, through all the bullshit, and they're behind Israel 100%. And then you have the 20% who are confused, who are extremists, who make the most noise. And it's like that with every issue. It's always like that. Antifa, BLM, it's always the minority making so much noise, and they're getting 80 to 90% of the coverage. So there seems there's an appearance as if America is confused. America is not confused. 20% or so of Americans are confused. They're making the most noise, and they're wrong, and it'll blow over. And one day they'll grow up and mature, hopefully, and understand that they were wrong. And that's how the story is going to end, because that's how it always ends. Good will win, evil will lose, and your mistakes, your silly thought processes, the propaganda that you bought into, will be written about and read about in history books. At the end of World War II, a lot of that took place as well. What was the guy's name? The chief propagandist for the Nazi Goebbels. They ran, you think this is new, this whole propaganda game? They ran ads to get the West and the Allies to think that the population of the Allies to think that we were killing more civilians than we were. They inflated the numbers by hundreds of thousands. And then you had people, civilians in the Allied countries, who are going against the government and calling genocide and all this. This is not new. This is warfare 101. We deal with this every day. Anyway, so this is like, as you could see, it's less about the actual details of the arguments, but more about understanding more about the notion of how to approach information altogether. How do we approach this stuff? Like, how do we make sense of it? So on and so forth. Because if you have the wrong guidance, if you're going to the wrong places, you're not going to make sense of any of this stuff. So you had, so let me see. So we said Mays. So Mays mentioned, like I said, so Mays mentioned, you know, Israel has to dismantle. That made zero sense for reasons I explained. Mays also puts down narratives that that completely omit accountability and responsibility on the side of the Palestinians. And this is a common theme amongst all pro-Palestine supporters. It seems to be something that a demographic struggles with in general. And I don't want to be picky here, but it's not just about Israel-Palestine. These types of people who do that, they're the same types that don't want to take accountability and responsibility for other things. And it's just a fact, whether it's accepting that there's two genders and that's the end of the story, they struggle with stuff like that as well. And that's why you see so many of those types at these protests. You know what? You know who else you see at the protests? Foreigners, not Americans, right? And I understand that. I'm the first person to say that I understand tribalism. Andrew Tate, he's a Muslim, so he's going to be tribal and stick up for them. No problem. Most Arabic countries, your brothers, your cousins, your sisters, your mothers, I get it. Tribalism, don't underestimate how tribal human beings are. We will 100% choose being tribal over truth, logic, intelligence, and coherence. It's just a fact. And you see that. So I understand that. The concerning part is not that. The concerning part is how it affects and how it gets into democracies where people are supposed to be educated. The biggest colleges, the biggest campuses, the biggest universities, supposed to be tip-top education, creme de la creme. and you know, they're rocking Hamas flags. I mean, it's just, it's comical. It's beyond stupidity. It's comical. That's where things get a bit concerning. But do know that it's a very small portion that are making a lot of noise and getting a lot of attention. Don't confuse that with people who see clearly and they see through all the bullshit. So I'm just trying to run through in my head some of the comments that were made yesterday. Patriot went on a whole 10-minute rant about somebody telling him voting for Trump, this, that. I believe I'm not a huge political person in that sense. I usually speak more to a notion of morality and truth regarding staying alive. Kill or be killed is a real thing. Survival of the fittest is a real thing, and we're living it. I don't concern myself too much with political theory and stuff like that. But I will say that a lot of people are struggling to understand, you know, why Trump might be pro-Israel. What a lot of people understand, people with proper education and clarity on the matter, they understand that Israel is the only thing standing between jihadism and America for the most part. And it's called interest. Presidents or countries have interest in other countries because oftentimes, and as is the case with Israel, they're fighting a battle that they know they're taking one for the team. It's not theory. Iran openly says that they want to wipe out Israel and America. We're the little guys. They're the big. America's the big goal, and all these proxies who are fighting for Iran. There's no confusion on the matter. It's very clear. So people with clarity, people on the right, conservatives and Republicans, understand that this is really a global war. When a terror group invades a democracy and slaughters over 1,000 people, that is something that's an attack on humanity. It's an attack on the free world. It's an attack on everything that we're working towards. And people with moral and ethical clarity understand that. Hence the interest. There's a ton of reasons. I'm not going to get into the politics of why Israel is such a close ally to America, so on and so forth, why it's the only viable and feasible way to reach peace in the Middle East. If we forfeit that, we essentially lose the entire Middle East. There's so many different reasons, but just on a basic level, it's interest. We're essentially the guinea pig. We're the one standing in the middle, and we're taking all the heat from jihadism. And if we weren't here, the rest of the world would be taking that heat. Global jihadism, fundamental jihadism, has to be eradicated. Get that through your mind. It's going to go. And it's the responsibility of the entire free world to eradicate it. End of story, period. There's a lot of hypocrisy. Obviously, many have said this. I don't have to repeat it about around anti-Semitism. I don't really whine and cry a lot about anti-Semitism. As I said, I care more about the fact, the morality and the ethics of staying alive. The notion of running around and yelling anti-Semitism, it's not here nor there. I couldn't care less. But you do have to ask yourself why the double standard. You certainly do. Because what the world is trying to hold Israel, the standard that the world is trying to hold Israel to, it never existed. The civilian to combatant death ratio has never happened in modern warfare. There's so many things that Israel is excelling above and beyond, even in this conflict, sadly, on the backs of many who are dying. Why the double standard? And it doesn't seem like you can separate that double standard from one level or another of anti-Semitism. It's something that you have to figure out between yourself and God. It's a spiritual, the issue with anti-Semitism and racism and these things, it's a spiritual journey. You have to find within yourself to see if exhibiting those feelings and those behaviors. But what is my responsibility? What is the responsibility of an Israeli is to keep the country safe and to stay alive. So if you hold shitty ideas, if you hold false ideas, and those result in people trying to kill me, well, it's my responsibility to rise up and kill them. And going back to some of the stuff that Alpha was saying about religion, this and that and the other, religion has less to do with this than you may think. Going back, like so many people asking, like, where do we start? And people get confused. Do we start in 1948? How did this all start? Some people say 1930s. People were coming in. Do we go back to 1880? Listen, you want unbiased, historical, expert insight into the history? Listen to some Benny Morris. He's respected across the board, across the spectrum, from the right to the left. And he is unbiased to a certain degree. People look up to his works. Listen to Benny Morris. You want real insight. But for the sake of arguing and having these conversations, I don't think you need to go back before, you know, the 1948 situation. And it started very simply. We were given a portion of land in the partition from Britain. And the Palestinians and the neighbors that we have here didn't accept it. And that's where it started. And it was that fight was never given up. I don't know why it's such a complicated thing. Britain controlled the land. The UN decided that Israel is to have a state, and a state was formed. And we are 75 years into tantrums and not accepting the reality of the situation, and the pain and the suffering will die down and go away once the reality of the situation is accepted. Biblically, I will just say this, but what I wanted to say, getting in all the Christian, Muslim, Islam, the Quran, the Bible, the Torah, there's a physical reality of what's taking place. That reality is that terrorists invaded our country. They savagely did what they did, and now they're paying the price. And the entire society pays the price, unfortunately, because more than 70% of the society voted them in and continued to support them. And until they don't rise up against them, until they don't overturn it, this doesn't stop. This stops when the group of people that perpetrated it, when they're no longer gone, that's when this stops. I like to think of the end of world. Think about the end of World War II, where the Allies decide we're going to wipe out the Nazis, the Third Reich. It's coming to an end by any means necessary, right? Think about the civilians who were in Germany at that point. What was the only thing that they could have done to save themselves before we actually went and killed hundreds of thousands of them? Actually carpet bombed them. What could they have done? Ask yourself that. Because I love learning from history. History tells us everything we need to know, so we don't waste our time with fantasy and stupid protests that do nothing. The only thing that they could have done was risen up, the citizens, risen up and protested against the Reich for them to surrender. They didn't do that. They stood behind them. And the Reich itself didn't surrender. And we basically wiped them out almost to the last man, right? But in retrospect, it's unthinkable. We carpet bombed hundreds of thousands of people. Why couldn't they have stayed alive? What could they have just done to stay? Why did they deserve that? They were indoctrinated. It's very simple. They didn't do the only thing that they could have done to stay alive, which would be to get their government to resign, to get their get the Third Reich to resign. It's no different now with Gaza, and I literally have been saying this from month one, right after October 7th. You hear all this noise, all this support for Palestine and Palestinians, yet all of it is neglecting to do the only thing that could save Palestinian, innocent Palestinians, whatever that even means, innocent. And that is to implore and pressure Hamas for an unconditional surrender and for the return of the hostages. Otherwise, Israel is not going to stop, because Israel has a moral obligation, a moral duty. It's not just a question of, is Israel morally right in what they're doing? They have a moral duty to do what they're doing. And the only way less civilians die is if Hamas is done, wiped out, or surrendered. So if that's logically the case, and we could learn from World War II, doesn't it make sense then that everyone should be imploring Hamas to surrender? But unfortunately, we do not learn from history. We are now repeating the same thing. So you have all of these people, all the conspiracy, all the pro-Palestine, all the actual Palestinians. They're standing behind the Third Reich of Hamas, and they're standing behind Hamas, and therefore so many are dying, and therefore more will continue to die until Hamas is wiped out. Unfortunately, but it does seem to be the nature of how human beings behave, and the propaganda is not helping. Everyone who's sharing propaganda or disseminating stupidity, as I heard a lot of it in the Twitter space, they should switch their focus to staying alive. I was essentially begging 5 months ago, like, what is wrong with you? What is the difference between Ukraine and Gaza? First, they said, there's nowhere for them to go. Yet somehow the entire population moved into the south of Gaza. There's nowhere for them. Like, that's like the propaganda is so silly. There's nowhere for them to go. Well, there was somewhere for them to go, and they fucking went there. And those who didn't died. You know, in Ukraine, when Russia started their invasion, people left. There's always somewhere for you to go. When Israel is dropping leaflets over your house because it's going to be bombed because there's a fucking tunnel entrance in it and it's a legitimate military target, you damn right there's somewhere for you to go. Take your fucking kids and go five blocks away, or go where they're telling you to go. Don't leave your kid in the building and then, you know, run back after it was bombed with a video camera showing, oh my God, they killed babies. How about the babies start hiding where the adults are hiding? Because the adult males never seem to die. It's only the kids. So wherever the fuck the adult males are, that's where the kids should be hanging out. There's nowhere for them to go. There's always somewhere to go. My point is, we're not seeing behaviors from rational human beings. We see behavior from rational human beings in the Ukraine war, where you're told to leave, you're told to move, you fucking go, you fucking move, you do what you're told. Don't act like a death cult who literally worship martyrdom, which is essentially suicide. You worship martyrdom, and then you turn around and whine and cry when you die or when your family member died. You literally fucking committed suicide. And then you expect me to feel bad that you died. Like there's so much internal contradiction that it's very difficult for people who truly understand the culture and what they're doing to properly empathize. Now, sympathy, that being said, there's if you're a human and you feel there's a deep sympathy for every innocent child and human being that dies in that conflict. But to see that globally, those who support Palestinians aren't doing the only thing to stop them from, I'm standing here begging you, implore Hamas to surrender. I don't want to see another dead human being. Beg them to surrender because I understand that that's the only way this ends. Me, the Israeli who supports Zionism and supports the IDF, I'm begging you to do the only, but you are not even doing that. Those who support Palestine are not doing the only thing that could stop it. And then you expect us to believe that it's genuine, that it's not anti-Semitic. Anyway, I may have veered a drop slightly from the conspiracy aspect of this topic. I was trying to run through to see if I missed anything. This was the overall thing. Look, again, I want to invite anyone who wants to have a real conversation, a truth-based conversation, a dialogue or a debate, but not like a heated debate. I don't yell and scream and get into these stupid yelling matches, but we could have a real debate where each person has time, equal time to speak about one topic at a time. But these spaces where you're just vomiting out just a bunch of nonsense, that's not quality content. It's not truth-based. There's nothing to that. It's not here nor there. It's pure and utter entertainment, and it should only be interpreted as entertainment. Thank you for listening. Peace and love.